you talk a little bit about anger, and you think that's one of the worst things you can do.
Boy, this one is so different in the research. And boy, I hope when your listeners call in, I'm no guru. All I've done is gone to the research with this. I was always taught, as a young resident, you've got to help your patients vent their anger. Anger turned inward is depression. The only thing wrong with that is there's no data to support it, and tons of data for the reverse.
True.
My one-liner is, repress yourself. Keep your anger in. It will dissipate. 20% of myocardial infarctions, of heart attacks, happen when you're angry. And I only ask your listeners who doubt me to think of the times when you get express your anger. How do you feel? Better? No, you get angrier. And it festers. I know people don't believe it because, again, it's been one of those McMorrows of the self-help movement that somehow, in some way, we are a hydraulic system that steam builds up in us, and if we don't let it out, we will sort of implode into this psychological bomb of helplessness. And therefore, we've got all these anger courses and how to express your anger and how to get it out. And I'm telling you, George, look at the data. That's why I put the research in the book so they could look it up for themselves. I know it sounds only logical that I've got to get that anger out of me, but the data doesn't support it. Well, more than 10 years ago, the president of the American Psychological Association said then, we've got to stop this venting approach in therapy. It's making things worse. We have to have what we call behavioral activation. Do something. Don't just vent. Go do something constructive. And expressing anger, venting anger, getting it out is just a deadly, deadly thing to do. And the first question I ask my patients when they come to see me, and this will predict, and your listeners can answer it right now, this will predict more than probably any other variable how well they're going to do in their life in terms of their physical and mental health, how they're going to heal when they're ill. And here comes the question. Think of the person who knows you the best right now. Is that your wife, a sister, brother, or a colleague? Now, how would that person answer this next question about you? Are you a true joy to live with every day? Listen to that question again. Are you a true joy to live with every day? That's an anti-self-help question, because the self-help question is my life a joy every day? I'm asking, what have you done for someone else lately? Are you just dumping this anger? Where do you think that anger goes? It isn't good for your health. No matter how many books you've read about it, no matter how many people have told you that, venting anger kills. It is absolutely deadly. If you can just sit down, shut up, it will go away.
Why are some people, Paul, just evil, and other people are not? You've got some people who will kill, maim, rob. You have other people who are benevolent, generous. Why the distinction?
Well, there's a history to this, George, which is very important. Years ago, just before World War II, there was a lot of research going on temperament. That is, just at birth, people are different. Well, then when the Nazis came into power, then this started to be used in reverse, if you know what I mean, that there's a superior race, a superior temperament. But we do know, Jerome Kagan at Harvard and other researchers know, and every parent listening to my voice knows, if you have two or three children, those children are as different as night and day. Temperament does exist. And there are some people, whether we want to face this or not, who are born with an evil temperament. They just have it in them. That doesn't mean they can't do some things about it. We can't modulate it a little bit. We can't moderate it a little bit. But one of the most shocking things your listeners can hear tonight from the research is you're already as happy as you're probably going to be. You have it in you. It's not going to change much. And if you're going to buy all the self-help books, if you've got this evilness in you, you better face it and learn to modulate it. This idea that you're going to change a lot is a myth. All we can do is realize that you don't have to have a wonderful life to have a pretty good one. Stop trying to be this self-improvement project. I think it was the Eagles who had this song about, I'd like to find your inner child and spank its little butt.
And you know what? Stop trying to keep up with the Joneses.
Well, that's what we've done. That's what, isn't that what the whole self-help movement is based on? You can be as good as me. You can be better than me. And the ante goes up and up. Western culture is the first in history to desacralize. I think it was there's Elaine that's done some research on this. We've desacralized the world. We've not made it sacred. You can go through your whole day now in Western culture with all the efficiencies and all the programs and all the things we do with our cell phones and our electronics without really thinking about anything more than yourself. And that you see people on cell phones. You see them walking down the street with a cell phone in their ear talking to nobody like they're a schizophrenic walking the street. And we've come to accept this as normal. And this is really sort of the aftermath of the pseudo-religion, this on-church religion of self-help that has this whole set of premises we can talk about that get your anger out, vent your feelings, get in touch with your inner self, always express your anger, always be a positive person. Those kinds of thoughts are just becoming limiting to the full potential of what it is to really lead a life that's good enough, that's content, that's really focused on someone else, not just yourself.